Across the abyssal reaches of the galaxy, near every living species has at some point been subjected to sheer terror, brutal punishment, and abject cruelty. It does not matter if one lives in a guarded outpost within the furthest reaches of the ghoul stars or in the sanctified halls of a treasured shrine world. Nowhere is safe from the clawed talons of this most heinous group. These harrowing acts of gruesome torment will be performed by one species, the damned and fallen Drukhari. In the ancient days of the Eldari civilization, their celestial empire fell due to the increasingly depraved and overwhelmingly decadent conduct of its members, which eventually culminated in the manifestation of a fourth chaos god within the warp, a being known as Slaanesh. Their birth sealed the tragic fate of the Eldari as the Dark Prince voraciously feasted upon untold billions of the succulent and delectable Eldar souls amidst a cataclysmic maelstrom, which has left an indelible scar upon the galaxy in the form of the Eye of Terror. There were many among the Eldari populace who rejected and disavowed the ostentatious lifestyle of their kin, and so they chose to flee to the great floating craft worlds, or to the verdant maiden worlds. With that being said, however, there were many more within the pleasure cults who had managed to avoid the gaze of Slaanesh by finding refuge within their webway-based homes. These atrocious survivors were free to reconstruct their own society in a manner which mirrored their blackened and abhorrent souls. One of the greatest technological achievements of the Eldari was to decipher and integrate the ancient webway within their civilization. This intricate labyrinthine maze can be perceived as an extra-dimensional realm, which sits between our own tangible plane of physical reality and of the enigmatic abyss of the warp. It still endures to this day, but as a result of several great incidents of turbulent warp activity, as well as some engineered intervention projects, parts of it have been closed off or sealed forever. Sadly, it is doubtful that it will ever be as interconnected as it was during the height of the Eldari civilization. But this does not mean that it has been entirely abandoned. It is here, within the hallowed depths of the webway, that the Drukhari lurk. As previously stated, many Eldari fled far from their prior vestiges of civilization. But for the surviving members of the pleasure cults, they saw a true darkness deep within the webway, which they could call a home. Their discerning eyes saw through the abyss and beheld the greatest of ancient port cities, a vast and intricate realm known as Komorah. In the days of yore, this metropolis had been used as something not dissimilar to an imperial shipyard, only at a much grander scale. It harbored the colossal Eldari fleets, along with their crews, and could be used as a staging post to rapidly send transports or entire armadas to anywhere within the galaxy, all along the ephemeral and silken threads of the webway. But with the collapse of their mighty civilization, Komorah was left as a barren hub, a ghost port in which no stirs of life remained. Despite the chilling aura exuded by this realm, the pleasure cultists felt no fear towards the empty star-scraping spires and desolate harbors. Instead, they only saw it as an opportunity. As a port city, Komorah was equipped with an unquantifiable measure of webway portals, which connected it to every corner of the galaxy. Even during the bygone days of the Eldari, Komorah was regarded as a position of such importance and such significance that no single individual would ever be allowed to rule over it. Instead, they saw it as something of a tool, a gateway which should be accessible to all, and that anyone should have the liberty to travel through it freely and without opposition. They understood the sheer level of power and influence that one could hold if they claimed authority over this realm. Thus, it was decreed that the port city should exist outside of the jurisdiction of the Eldari councils, making it into somewhat of a neutral entity or sovereign free state. This autonomous stance is part of the reason why so many survivors of the Great Fall fled to seek refuge within Comora. It was already ingrained within their minds that this was a safe haven for any who did not wish to live under the strict rule of the Eldari councils. Naturally, this thought extended to those who sought to reject the stringent path of the Asuriani upon the craft worlds, or to those who spurned the simple life of the ignorant fools upon the Exodite worlds. Furthermore, being positioned as a pivotal nexus point within the galactic network of the Webway, Comora had always received a never-ending flow of trade through its portals, and it reaped these benefits to no end. A relentless influx of riches poured into the city, leading to further growth of such a scale that Comora had effectively absorbed several smaller port cities during its expansion. This had left the barren city as being incomparably well-equipped to serve the fleeing survivors. It could shelter billions, perhaps even trillions, and had the means of producing any technological marvel which the inhabitants may have desired. Over the course of the next 10,000 years, the city has undergone a resurgence in its populace, with a true horde of Drukhari now calling it home. I cannot speculate as to how many inhabitants actually live there, as portions of the city still languish in desolation, but the numbers undoubtedly stand at a prodigious level, rivaling even the population of entire craft worlds. Additionally, Comora is no longer the exclusive domain of the Drukhari alone. Those who call the Dark City as their home value the strength, cunning, and utility of any who may serve them. And so there is now a bustling community of alien mercenaries from every corner of the galaxy who have found purchase within the shrouded streets. Bounty hunters, trackers, pirates, assassins, bodyguards, information brokers, smugglers, pilots, infiltrators, and salvage experts, it truly does not matter the work nor the worker. So long as you can bring some value to Comora, then you are welcome. In addition, there are billions of slaves held in captivity within its public dungeons and cells who are seen as mere commodities to be bought and sold away to those who have nothing but nefarious intentions for their poor souls. There are also hundreds of distinct animal species which lurk and prowl about its dark corners, eagerly ambushing any foolish individuals who did not see the malevolent glint of their bared fangs. Now that we know of how it was established and repopulated after the fall, I shall attempt to convey to you the staggering scale of Comora, for it is truly an impossibility to show just how vast this city actually is. Words fail when it comes to defining such a maleficent realm. Comora transcends the mere concept of a celestial metropolis. One could not compare even the largest of imperial hive cities to this structural consortium, as they would appear as but puddles sitting next to an oceanic expanse. Even its physical location defies all understanding. Comora is not a solitary entity. Instead, it has hundreds of far-flung satellite cities situated across the Webway, which are each connected to the central hub of the city via the Webway portals. Whilst the real space location of these nodes would appear to place them thousands of light years apart, due to the technological marvel of the Webway, they can also be seen as being clustered together, forming a sprawling nexus which transcends the constraints of physical separation. Its towering buildings violate all physical dimensions or structural principles as they soar into the tinted darkness of the sky, jutting out like blades aimed at the throats of the gods. Immense buttresses interlace these star scrapers, with palaces and fortresses being built up wherever they may stand. It is here that many of the more influential and powerful Drukhari reside. Archons and Kabylite nobles live wherever they please, but they take great pride in owning the tallest of structures, where they may gaze down upon their lesser kin with looks of nothing but disdain. Many of these gigantic structures show huge protruding docks, teeming with hundreds of star vessels or nimble skimmers, which are all tethered by crackling fields of violet electromagnetic force. For the Drukhari nobility, flaunting your opulence to your many rivals is almost more important than life itself. As such, the most braggadocious of archons will commission colossal statues and effigies of themselves, often fashioned with a permanent look of contempt aimed at their prideful contemporaries. If one was to foolishly crane their necks and look up at the peaks and spires of the behemothic structures of the upper city, they may be unfortunate enough to match the gaze of a terrible scourge. These are the most daring of Drukhari, who have sought out a foul homunculus to hollow out their bones and graft a set of wings upon their backs. They will fly higher and higher through the shrouded skies, until eventually finding their perch somewhere amidst the apex of Komarov's tallest buildings. These half-avians still act as mercenaries for the Drukhari nobles below them. But be warned, for if you gaze into the skies and meet the eye of a scourge, then they will gleefully plunge down to snatch you up and impale you on the very spires which they call their home. Komora is eternally bathed in the half-light of a dozen black suns, which were stolen during the zenith of Eldari decadence. This baleful crimson hue illuminates a considerable portion of the city, but far more of Komora remains cloaked in shadow, and it is here that some of the most vile and loathsome creatures lie, all conspiring towards some sinister and soulless plan. Describing Komora as possessing a conventional ground floor is somewhat of a conceptual impossibility. The nature of its construction means that many buildings jut downwards, just as much as they shoot up, so the idea of a base level simply does not exist. That being said, the busiest walkways and bustling thoroughfares are often littered with brutal iron cages, housing a variety of slaves or prisoners who have been subjected to a public display of torment and anguish. As stated, just as the tallest of star scrapers will pierce upwards towards the skies, so too do they plunge downwards into the abyssal depths of this realm. The lowest of ports may have been architectural masterpieces eons ago, but after several millennia of civil war and strife, they have been reduced to shattered ruins. These have been stripped and scavenged of any potential value, leaving them as nothing but broken reminders of the splendorous bygone days of the Eldari. Many of these lower districts are lorded over by specific Kabylite factions or ruthless gangs who will not hesitate to rob, attack, enslave, or murder those who are found intruding upon their territories. Prudence and attentiveness is of the utmost importance when traversing these regions. The light of the stolen suns rarely kisses the depths of Komora, so it is enshrouded in a near-permanent darkness, making many susceptible to becoming lost and ensnared within its foul recesses. These regions are not the exclusive domain of the Drukhari alone. Within the mercenary district of Sek Megra, known locally as the Null City, there is a vast consortium of outcasted Xenos who are driven by the incentive of serving the highest bidder. In this desolate realm, the streets are marred by scorch marks and rubble, which bear witness to a state of eerie stillness, punctuated only by the crackling staccato bursts of splinter cannons and the agonized screams of those who have fallen prey to a lurking horror. The dark skies are streaked with the luminous trails of jet bikes and skimmers, which silently careen between the urban canyons, providing the riders with a great sense of thrill and exhilaration. The olfactory experience here is nothing short of offensive. The polluted waterways exude the stench of stagnant sewer gases, which mingle with the aroma of spent cordite and ionized plasma coils, culminating in an utterly acrid environment which few could safely endure. Decrepit corpse fishers skim across the surface of these noxious waterways in ancient crafts, dredging up a macabre bounty of dead creatures and hardy animals which have adapted to the toxic habitat. These are then sold on as food or foul materials to those who would gladly utilize the decomposing matter. The shrouded fisher ships are often harassed and raided by the marauding reaver jet bikers who swoop down to plunder or abduct crew members to invariably be sold on as slaves to some disgusting homunculus coven. As we delve deeper into the heart of Comoros, we will encounter some vestigial domains of the elder Drukhari nobles who have eschewed an existence within the high spires to live amongst their people deeper in the city. They reside within opulent palaces and mansions, each sitting atop colossal citadels filled to the brim with Kabbalite warriors who have sworn their unwavering loyalty to their aristocratic rulers. Within this central part of the city, there is a region known as Khor Spur. Since the Drukhari first claimed Comoros, this area had become the prized and palatial home for the most esteemed of the various noble houses. Unfortunately, however, during the great raid on Comoros by imperial forces during the 35th millennia, most of this region was razed to the ground. Many of the noble houses were also exterminated, both by the imperial invaders and by the ambitious former slave who ascended into the greatest of Drukhari lords known as Asdrubal Vect. Following on from the imperial retreat, it was Vect who established himself as the sole noble lord who could fill the power vacuum left by this conflict. Over the next millennia, he ordered for the reconstruction of Khor Spur and commissioned 13 great statues of himself to stand over the ruins of the old noble palace homes. Each statue was intended as a statement to claim that even the most powerful of houses within Comoros could not last eternally, and that all it would take would be for a lowly slave to bring about their downfall. Deeper into the city, an ancient precinct of Comoros known as Elindraq has fallen to complete abandonment by its former masters. The veiled mandrakes have laid claim to this realm, and they prowl about its dark corners, drawing power from the shroud of eternal night. Rumors persist of an ancient portal, found in a shrouded corner of Elindraq, which connects to a fallen world, inhabited only by shade demons who can freeze the soul of an individual from but a touch. The foul creature can then simply pluck the delectable essence from out of their corporeal vessel, only to consume it with sinister relish, before moving on from the ashen corpse now left in their wake. It is here, close to the Khor, that we also unearth the covens and bone middens of the witch cults. These have been built up from the trabecula remains of millions, with skeletons belonging to every species to have ever inhabited our galaxy. Some of these have been artfully propped up and constructed into the frame of a mock battle, where they eternally stand, locked in an ancient conflict, all as a grim testament to the power and status of the Drukhari as the ultimate hunters of reality. The arenas of the witch cults have been built up into gaudy displays of opulence, with each standing as an architectural masterpiece, adorned with a gruesome tapestry of corpses piled high atop colossal barbed spikes. The combatants who grace these arenas with their presence will duel and perform for captive audiences, putting on shows of such enthralling delight that they would mesmerize even a harlequin. They pirouette and dance through death-defying challenges, pitting their wits against the strongest of slaves or creatures from every corner of the galaxy. Sordid whispers even suggest that in one particular arena, a legendary show consists of pitting an enslaved imperial custodes against the ferocious witches. But these tales remain as a shrouded myth within the enigmatic confines of Comora. Beyond the realm of the witch cults, we will also find huge factories, which rival the great manufacturums of Mars in their scale. Countless slaves from every species toil within the infernal foundries until they eventually expire, with each one contributing to the construction of the vile and dreadful weapons and armaments wielded by Kabbalite warriors. It is an unsettlingly common occurrence for many slaves to inexplicably disappear from a work line, seemingly being consumed by their own shadow, with only the Emperor knowing of what abhorrent creature is truly responsible for abducting them. It is also in these deep reaches that we will uncover the twisted and despicable covens of the homunculi. More so than any of their fellow Drukhari, it is the foul brotherhood who have garnered a most deplorable and grotesque reputation for their acts of rapacious cruelty. Their dank and seedy laboratories will be filled to the brim with instruments of torture, vials of exotic compounds, and strange equipment used for their appalling experimentations. Some of the more extreme of Drukhari may visit these reviled chirurgeons to enhance their frames with any modifications they can dream up. Nothing is beyond the abilities or morals of a skilled homunculus, and they will happily push their areas of surgical expertise to the very limit, all in the pursuit of reshaping your flesh into a new form of perfection. Do be warned, however, that if you find yourself within one of their covens, then you may be destined for an unending life of misery. They will joyfully test their skills by weaving your very nerve fibers into a new set of slippers. They may force your bones to endlessly grow until you rip at the seams. Or perhaps they will reshape you into a new set of furniture for themselves. Their capacity for cruelty truly knows no bounds. Venturing ever downwards, within the deepest and most mysterious of regions of Comora, we will find the towering enigma of Cain's Gate. Its location and purpose is known to only a select few of the most privileged nobles and high archons, but there is a sound reason behind keeping it as a secret to the rest of the city. Physically, it stands as a vast circular door of exotic metal, glowing with esoteric warding runes and coated in chains woven by materials unfound from this plane of reality. The purpose of these protective countermeasures are simple. The Drukhari must keep this gate utterly sealed from that which lies behind it. Cain's Gate is indeed a portal to the treacherous warp. It is one of the only breaks in the webway which neither the Eldari Bonesingers nor the Drukhari homunculus covens could ever hope to repair. And it connects the hellish realm of chaos to the relatively stable currents of reality within Comorak. For eons, the Harlequin troupe, known as the Mask of the Midnight Sorrow, would perform for their Drukhari cousins, regaling them with their masterworks of artistic revelry and performative excellence. Rumor has it that the only reason they choose to perform in the Den of Inequity, which is Comorak, is so that they can keep a watchful eye on the status of Cain's Gate. Several of the troop's members will be found prowling about within the shadows around the archaic structure, ever waiting for a sign that the demonic hellspawn are ready to emerge. Such was the threat posed by the horrors of the warp that it was not only the Harlequins who kept a stern vigil over the gateway. During the 41st millennium, it is said that the Drukhari began to hear a slow and rhythmic pounding coming from whatever lurks behind the ancient gate. Fearing that this may be the sign of an impending assault, the Supreme Overlord, Asdrubal Vect, ordered for 500 battle-scarred incubi to be stationed within the gate's chamber, where they were to simply wait and stand guard against anything which may manifest itself from that hellish portal. Each of these incubi were selected not only for their prowess in battle, but also because they had at some point in time wronged him, and so this deployment acted as a double-edged sword to both protect Komara, as well as to punish those who ever acted against his best interests. In addition to his guards, Vect had readied some of his most cabalistic and occult of weapons, which were only to be used in the event of the gate breaking. These include a triprismic dimensional mirror, which when looked into would suck the viewer through to the molten heart of a blazing sun. Dotted around the chamber are hundreds of additional defenses, such as temporal flux mines, which when detonated will trap the victim in a bubble of frozen time, from which there is no known salvation. Some of you may believe that these tools are rather excessive in their cruelty, but you must remember that for the Drukhari, nothing is off limits. As time passed, the stationed incubi sent reports of the otherworldly hammering increasing in frequency and that the gate had started to rapidly vibrate, seemingly causing the air itself to morph and buckle along with it. Furthermore, many of those ordered to guard the shimmering gateway had been driven past the point of sanity. Some were seen to carve horrific prophecies into the walls, declaiming the death of Komara, whilst others were seen to beg and plead for their kin to aid them in opening the gate themselves. Those who fell to this fate were quickly rounded up and sent to the labs of the Homunculus Covens as a most prized gift. As Abaddon the Despoiler's 13th Black Crusade gained headway across the galaxy, the tumultuous writhing of the warp became ultimately too great to contain. All across the galaxy, terrible warp storms and gaping rifts were ripped into existence, and yet Cain's Gate held fast against the crashing tides of unreality. Unfortunately, however, this could not last. During the catastrophic and explosive birth of Inead, the Eldari god of the dead, the sheer force of his psychic emanations proved to be too fierce, and Cain's Gate finally burst open. Untold legions of demonic hellspawn ripped their way through the now gaping portal, utterly overwhelming the strange machinations and defenses which lay before them. The lower regions of Komara became an otherworldly battlefield, with nobles bringing their most ancient and archaic tools to bear against the demon kin. Nevertheless, with a tremendous counterattack, it was Asdrubal Vect who led a timely offense, which succeeded in scouring the demonic presence from all but the lowest of sub-realms within the city depths. It soon seemed, however, that the gate itself could not be reached, as the swarming hordes of hellspawn were simply too numerous to banish. As such, the Supreme Archon severed the region containing Cain's Gate from the rest of the city, plunging it into an impossible abyss known as the Chasm of Woe. Even though this localized subdimension was utterly separated from the Webway and from Komarach, it did not halt the encroaching forces of the warp. In response to this, the Drukhari have embarked on hundreds of raids to procure a vast stock of the treasured material known as Black Stone. The exact nature of this substance is still mostly unknown to all but the ancient Necrons. However, it is known to nullify the strange psychic emanations of those who call the warp as home. Thanks to these properties, the recovered Blackstone has been used to construct a psychic shield around the Chasm of Woe, which has been somewhat successful in keeping the ravenous demons at bay. This solution is not perfect, however, and so the incursion of demonic forces has become an all too common threat to those who dwell within the deeper streets of Komara. Rumor has it that the Drukhari have started on a project known as the Black Throne, which is intended to replicate the psychic effects of the Imperium's own Golden Throne, all to finally seal the gaping rift of Cain's Gate. Some of the more paranoid of Imperial scholars have suggested that, in order to complete this project, that the Drukhari will seek to produce a clone of the sanctified Emperor himself, and if this is true, then Throne only knows of how they would seek to obtain his holy genetic material. The features and spectacles which I have described are but a fraction of what Komorah has to offer. It is a truly surreal maze of labyrinthine buildings and districts, each being scattered across the city in an inexplicable fashion. There is no real beginning or end to Komorah. With each Terran year that passes, the city's boundaries appear to expand, encroaching in on additional sectors of the webway with no real sign of stopping. There is undoubtedly no limit to the depths of depravity and torturous malevolence which is exhibited by its grim and sinister inhabitants. One must pray that hearing this sermon is the extent to which they will encounter the Dark City. For if your travels ever lead you to Komorah, then you are sure to never return.